in the middle, right in the middle of a short 3-week series. It's called Gender, Sex, and Marriage, A Biblical Perspective. And the point of this series is to understand God's truth in a topic that has lots of voices in it in our world. We talked about this a lot last week, but we believe that God has truth for us. God speaks truth, that God understands things and he communicates to us. He does that in different ways. He does it through the Bible. This is the beginning of so much of God's communication to us. Speaks to us, through his Spirit. But God wants to speak truth to us. We looked last week at the verse Psalm 86:11. Teach me your... No. How does it go? Someone remember how that goes? It's a great verse. Go look it up. It's a great verse. Oh, golly. I can't. It says drawing a blank. But anyhow, we believe that God speaks truth. And God's truth has an impact on us. If something is true, that shapes the way that we respond. It shapes what we do. If gravity is true, it impacts what I do, right? I mean, so their truth impacts us. It shapes us. And here's one verse that I didn't forget because it's printed on the PowerPoint. It's in Romans 12:2, which says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. And so there's a lot in there. It assumes that God has a will. It assumes that God has things that he wants us to know. And we can learn them. We can understand them. And if we do, it transforms us. In other words, it shapes us. We can know what God's will is, and we can respond. We can know what the truth is, and it helps us to respond. And so this series, again, is designed to help us dig into and try to understand what does God say about this topic of gender, sex, and marriage, which is a topic or topics that have lots of voices in our world. This series is not designed to... It's not a shot across the bow of anybody. We're not trying to here this week, redefine our culture or anything like that. This series is designed to help people who believe that God does speak on this and who want to know what that is. Does that make sense? We're looking at this from the standpoint that there are people, many of us, want to know what God's truth is, and we believe that God does have something to say about it. That's the framework. That's the audience, I guess, if you will, for this message. Now, that's totally up to you, by the way. Some people do not believe that God speaks, definitively about different things. Maybe God, there are people who don't believe that God speaks definitively about this topic of gender, sex, and marriage. I understand that. That's for each of us to decide. Some of us, perhaps, that don't care, or perhaps think, well, yeah, God says something, but that's of less priority, perhaps, than other things. Again, I'm not trying to attack anybody here. I'm just acknowledging here what this is for. What we're doing here today is we're going to look at God's truth, assuming that there is a truth, that God does have a truth, and that we want to know it so that it can, as we understand what God says, we can respond accordingly. Does that make sense? So that's not in any way designed to divide anyone. I just want to be clear about what the point of this is. We're assuming God speaks on this subject, and we're assuming that when he speaks on it, it's going to have an impact on us. It's going to affect us in some way, okay? That's the point of this series. And last week, we talked a lot about this idea that God created. Today, we're going to jump into gender, the idea of gender. Next week, we'll talk about sex and marriage. So when we think about this idea of gender, we're going to jump off of what we talked about last week. And by the way, one more thought. If you're wrestling with that idea that God has truth and that God speaks truth to us, maybe you want to listen to last week's message. Again, just because we talked about that, we kind of dug into that concept. The fact that God does have truth, he says he has truth, and how he communicates it to us, and what that means to us, how it impacts us. So if that's something that you're wrestling with, I get it. That's a good question to wrestle with, and maybe last week's message could help you in your wrestling a little bit. But we're jumping off of last week into the specifics of this idea of gender, okay? So today we're talking about this idea of gender. And we're starting with this: God created humans. And again, we looked at this last week, this idea that God made people. And in Genesis 1, Genesis 1:27, it says, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him." God made us. God made humans. God made everything we see. God made the environment in which we live. God made the world in which we live. And God made us. God made you and I. He made people and he put us here. So this is all part of God's plan. Now, if God did create us, that means a couple things. Number one, he has the ability to define us, to define humans and human activity. And by ability, I mean he understands us. If he made us, he understands us. It's like if I write a book, I understand what that book is about. If you really want to know what Huckleberry Finn was about, who's the one that's going to know more than anybody else? Mark Twain, because he wrote it. So because God created us, he understands us. So he has the ability to define humans and human activity better than anybody else. But if God created us, he also has something else. He has the authority to define us. Why? Well, because we're his. Mark Twain could have written Huckleberry Finn any way he wanted. Why? Because he wrote the book. If God created us, he has the authority to define us. He's not overstepping or anything like that. If he made us, he knows us, and he could make us any way he want. So God created humans, and he has the ability and the authority to define humans and human activity. That includes gender. Gender is God's creation as well. That verse, Genesis 1:27, it keeps going. It starts off, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." Gender is God's creation as well. And it says in here that God makes a distinction. Up to this point, he said, God made man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. It's all kind of one thing. But here, male and female, he created them. There's a plural there where it had been singular before. And so humans is kind of a singular thing made in God's image. But now there's a plural. It's divided. There's a distinction. There is a distinction made here in humans. And the distinction, according to this, is male and female. God made men and God made women. It's distinct. They're different. If they're distinct, they are also definable, right? If they're distinct, they are also definable. This is a chair, and that is a 1967 Impala. Is it a 67? 65. Okay. This is a pink chair. That's a red 65 Impala convertible. They're distinct, and they're definable. You can tell them apart, and you can explain the differences. According to this, according to what we read in the Bible, humans are made in two different forms, male and female. Those forms are distinct, they're different from each other, and they're definable. You can explain the differences. That is perhaps the crux of the discussion in our culture. Is gender truly distinct? Perhaps more salient is gender definable? Can you define it? And who defines it? I think maybe that catches the crux of the debate that's going on in our culture. Is gender, this idea of man and woman, is it definable? And if it is, who defines it? Let's ratchet this back to what I started this with and what we talked about last week. We believe God has truth. We believe that he can communicate that truth to us. And so I am going from the supposition here that is gender definable And who defines it? Well, I think God says, yes, it is definable, and I, God, define it. Male and female, he created them. There is a distinction in humans. The one who made us men and women. So is there a definable distinction? God says yes. Who can define it? Well, God has the ability and the authority to define it. So what we're going to do for the next few minutes is look at how God defines gender. How does God define men and women? And we're going to do it this way. We're going to start with this phrase, and we're going to add things to it, or we're going to fill out this phrase in some different ways. And the phrase we're starting with is this: men and women are created with different things. Men and women are created with different what? Well, the first one is different aspects of God's image. Men and women are created with different facets or different manifestations, if you will, of who God is. That's what that verse said. Remember? I'm going to read it again. I wish, Luke, can you type Genesis 1:27 on the screen, like, really fast? Let's see how fast Luke can type. Yeah, the whole thing. I'll read it while Luke is typing. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Wow, that's good. He's getting... There's the second half of it. That's good enough. We'll just do the second half of it here. But actually, we need the first part too. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. This distinction of male and female starts with or flows from what? Well, the image of God. Do you see that? Both are in the image of God, and that there's a distinction between them. Both are in the image of God, and yet there's a distinction. So men and women show different aspects of God's character, of God's nature. It would be like this. If I were to describe this rock to you, I could describe it in different ways. One of the things I could say is this rock is round, mostly. It's not completely round. But if I was describing it to you, I would say this rock is round, and you would understand that. Yes, it is. It's round. I could also say to you, this rock is hard. And that's true. You would understand it. This rock is hard. They both describe the rock. They are both aspects of what this thing is. They're very different, but both are necessary to describe the rock. Being round is no more or less important for the rock than being hard. It's just as much a part of it. Both of those things are necessary, they're true, they're real, they're descriptive of what the rock is. Here's the point to that. When God says, I'm making people in my image, male and female, I'm going to make them. What he means is that they are going to have different aspects. One might be round and the other one might be hard. But they're both part of God. Do you understand that? Both men and women, though they're different, are describing the same thing. Different aspects of the same thing. That rock is round and that rock is hard. Round and hard are different things, yet both of them are describing the same thing. Men are one way, women are another way. Both of them are describing parts of God. It's important for us to recognize that the distinctions between men and women are both pointing toward the same thing. They're different parts of who God is. Men and women are created with different aspects of God's image. But that leads into the second thing, which is this. Men and women are created with different roles. We've been given different roles, men and women have. And it shows up in many places as you read through the Bible. There's all kinds of different things where God says men function in this way, women function in that way. But one of the primary ones, perhaps, or one of the very very obvious ones that God lays out is in the role is in marriage. We're going to talk about marriage next week, but we see here that in marriage there are different roles for men and women. I want to read to you in Ephesians chapter 5, where it's talking about this idea of husbands and wives, men and women, and the roles that they play within there. Ephesians chapter 5, by the way, quotes Genesis 2, which we're going to get into in a minute, but it says Ephesians 5, verse 22, it says, "Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body, of which he is the Savior." So we see here some distinctions in role in the genders. There's a man and there's a woman. There's a husband and there's a wife. Again, we're going to get into that next week, how God defines marriage. We are defining it in terms of a marriage is between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife. And he says there that in that scenario, there are different roles for the men and the women. The husband leads out. The woman responds. The husband initiates. The woman responds. The husband is the head. The woman is following that, responding to the husband. Different roles here. And this is just one place where we see God giving these different roles for men and women. Now, it's interesting, though, to think about this, how this is described. It even says there that husbands are the head of the wives as Christ is the head of the church. Remember we said that men and women were made showing different aspects of God's character. Well, that plays out in the roles. This idea of somebody leading and somebody responding is very much part of who God is. Take a look at this verse in John chapter 6, verse 38. This is Jesus speaking about his relationship with God the Father. So this is Jesus. Jesus was God the Son, part of the Trinity. God himself who took on a body like ours and lived here on this earth. Jesus was God, all of God. Jesus here is talking about how he responds to God the Father. And he says this in John 6, verse 38, says, "For I, Jesus, have come down from heaven, not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me." In other words, Jesus is saying what? Well, I have a role here. And his role here, when he looks to God the Father, is what? Well, I'm going to submit. He leads, he's the head, and I follow. So this idea that we see in marriage where the wife submits and follows and the husband leads, those are just aspects of who God is. And that's that we are given roles to fill because of how we were created by God to reflect his glory. Jesus submitted to the Father. The Father led Jesus. Here's another one. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Verse 3 says, "Now I want you to realize that the head of every man is Christ, and the head of the woman is man, and the head of Christ is God." Again, what do we see here? Lots of different examples of leading, submitting, initiating, following. It's part of who God is. Christ chose to submit to the Father because that was his role, and it's a godly role. God the Father chose to be the head of Christ and to lead because it's a godly role. Men and women have been given godly roles that point back to who God is, and God created men to be the head, the leader, women to be the initiator, the submitter, just like Jesus was the initiator or was the follower, submitter. We've been given roles as men and women that reflect parts of who God is. They're good. They're wonderful. They mirror God. The third way that men and women are created differently is this: men and women are created with different biology. We're just physically different than each other. And I think God did that so that we could fill the roles that he's given us, primarily. There are other reasons probably that God made men the way he made men, women the way he made women. But he did it. He created us so that we could fill the roles that he has given us. And again, that shows up in all kinds of ways. We'll stick with this idea of marriage because we're going to be talking about that next week, marriage and sex and reproduction. One of the roles that God has for humans is to reproduce. And then way back in Genesis 1:28, God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it." The very first man and woman, he made them different, gave them different roles, and he also gave them different bodies, different biology, so that they could function within those roles. And again, that takes on all kinds of different aspects. One of them is this. Well, you need a man and a woman to make children, because that's the way that the biology works. And God made the woman with certain biology, the man with certain biology, so they could perform that function, so that they could do that. And that's true of all kinds of things. Men's bodies are different than women's bodies. They were designed that way so that we could fill our roles. And this is I think, fun to think about. When I think about the differences between men and women physically, there are just so many. It's fascinating. It would be really fun just to dive into this. One of the ones I used to tell my kids is that men's brains and women's brains are very different. Men's brains don't have the same interconnectivity between the two sides of the brain. A man's brain doesn't communicate as well with the other side of his brain, because when a young boy is in utero and his body begins to produce the male hormones, testosterone kind of floods that little boy's body at a time, and it severs some of the connection. So I used to tell my kids, "Your brother is brain damaged. He can't help it. He just..." And my wife would say, "Yeah, and so are you, Rob. You're brain heavy." But we're made differently. That's a big one. That's a big one. That God, our brains are different. Here's another one. Our skeletons are different. This is just a picture here of our... This is from Very Well Health. It's just a online website. Just differences. Men have bigger heads. Just big-headed, you know. But these things are true. Women have wider pelvises and torsos because of, and it makes sense with the childbearing. Men are just tend to be bigger, faster, stronger, so their bones are much more dense because they have to handle more muscle. Just differences between men and women, and these differences are for the most part universal. It's interesting. The Smithsonian Institute will definitively say, okay, here's an old skeleton that we dug up from however long ago. They will define them as men or women based on the bone structure, because it's just so universal. Men's bodies, men's bones are different than women's bodies. That's men's muscles are different than women's muscles. Men's brains are different than women's brains. We are biologically created differently. Women have different organs than men do. We're created differently. Why? Well, so that we can fill the roles that God has given us, those roles that reflect who God is. Men and women are created in God's image, distinctly, but showing aspects of God's character. We are made different so that we can fill certain roles that are also part of God's character. Men fill certain roles that God fills. Women fill certain roles that God fills also. And then God made us physically and biologically different so that we could accomplish those roles well. So as I look at the Bible, and I ask, are there distinct, definable differences between men and women? I say, yes. God says so, and we see it. There is evidence of that around us. God says, this is what a man is, this is what a woman is. They're distinct, they're different, they're definable. And when we look around, we can see that. Now, I realize that there are anomalies. In other words, everything doesn't work just exactly the same all of the time. There are people who are born with different physical aspects. In other words, there are people who are born with body parts that are some men, some women. The whole term hermaphrodite, if you understand what that means, it just means someone who is born with physical characteristics of both men and women. That certainly happens. That certainly happens. And that makes it harder and it makes it confusing. And I understand that. This idea of men and women, for many of us, for most of us, it's probably pretty simple, you know? Well, I'm a boy and you're a girl, and it's pretty easy and pretty simple. It's not so easy and simple for some people. I acknowledge that. It's not a lot. It's a small percentage, but it is true that there are differences that can be hard and that make it harder to work through this. But still, I think it is helpful for the majority of us who that's not true of, and for those people, I do believe it's helpful to understand, well, what is God's baseline? You see, we live in a world that doesn't function in the perfect way God designed it. When God designed humans, He put us in a world that was perfect, without birth defects, without sickness, without illness, without deformities, without mutations. God put us in a world where everything was and functioned the way that it was supposed to be and supposed to function. Sin entered the world and the world began to twist and warp, and we don't live in that world anymore. And now we have a world where there are malfunctions, where there are diseases, where there are children born with spina bifida. There are all kinds of things in this world that God didn't intend that are the result of sin. Those things make everything harder. And it can make this idea of gender much harder. It can. And I understand that. And yet I still think that it's helpful for all of us to understand, well, what is it that God says as a baseline? So that, what's the point of understanding God's truth? Well, to know how I respond. How do I go forward from here? So that's true of me. That's true of someone who is wrestling with these gender ideas. Both of us, if we understand God's truth and say, all right, God, this is what you say. This is where I am. Where do you want me to go from here? I think this is necessary and helpful for all of us. So men and women, are there distinctions? Are those distinctions definable? God says yes. God says yes, there are distinctions. Are those distinctions definable? God says yes, and I have defined them. Are those distinctions and definitions observable by us? I say yes. I say yes. If we look at it, we can see the wisdom, the truth of what God says play itself out in the world around us. So in this idea of gender, where there are many, many voices, what does God say? Well, God says that in the image of God, He created us, male and female, He created us. Men are made in God's image to fill certain roles, and they've been given bodies to help fill those roles. Women have been made in God's image to fill certain roles, and they've been given physical bodies to fill those roles. God says there are distinctions between men and women. God says those distinctions are definable. And we take this back to what we started this with and what we talked about last week. God has the ability, He understands us better than we understand ourselves, and He has the authority to make those definitions. He's not overstepping when He says, this is a man and this is a woman. He's not overstepping because He made us and He knows us. So we say, Lord, okay, what do I do with that now? Now, I think it's important and maybe helpful for us to answer one more question or look at one more thing here in this idea of gender. And that's this. I think it is easy to confuse gender and temperament. And I think this is where a lot of perhaps the confusion in our culture comes from, or where a lot of the discussion and debate might come from, is I think we can confuse gender and temperament Here's what I mean by that, or if I was going to define those terms a little bit. Temperament is how we act, kind of how we think, how we act. And there are differences in the way men and women think and act. There are differences in the temperament of men and women. Some of those differences in temperament come from our roles. Some of them come from our biology. Some of them come from the way that God created us. Men produce testosterone. Testosterone is a steroid. If you inject a person with steroids, it changes the way they think and act. It changes their temperament. Women are made to produce much more estrogen. If you inject a person with estrogen, it changes the way they think and act. The point of that is this. Some of our temperament, some of the difference in temperament between men and women is just, that's the way God created. Some of it is cultural, though. In other words, we just kind of, as a culture, expect in our minds, well, men kind of act this way, women kind of act this way. But that idea of temperament is not exactly the same as gender. They're connected for sure, but they're not exactly the same. And I think it's worthwhile taking a look at that. If we were going to, this little scale here. Let's just say that the far blue side is what we would all, or culture would say, well, this is very male. This is kind of how men think and act way over here on the blue side. And the red side is how culturally we would say, well, this is how women think and act. So on this spectrum, you've got on the far left, you've got this, the full-on manly man, and on the far right, you've got the girly girl, the womanly woman, just kind of temperamentally. Now, a person can fall in a lot of different places on that spectrum. And there are examples in the Bible, and we all know people who probably fall somewhere on that spectrum. For example, David. David is a guy who's a character in the Bible that we're given lots of information about. David is a prominent character in the Bible. We see a lot about David, not just what he does, we kind of see the story of his whole life, but we also see how he thinks and feels because he wrote a lot of the Psalms. So David's one of those guys that we know an awful lot about him because we get to read his story, what happened to him, right alongside reading what he thinks and feels about what's happening to him. So we can understand David in a really big way. And David is an interesting guy because in some ways, David falls way over here on the guy side. If you know the story of David and Goliath, you know that story? You read it in Sunday school, and it's quite a story. In 1 Samuel 17, David's just this boy, but he grew up with all kinds of brothers, and he shows up at a battle, and he just kind of goes all out crazy. And in verse 48 of 1 Samuel 17, as the Philistine, that's Goliath, moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly to the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him. David ran and stood over him. He took hold of the Philistine's sword and drew it from his scabbard, and he killed him and cut off his head with his sword. If you read the story, David walked around with his head for a while. He's got Goliath's head, and he's kind of dragging it around, which is something one of my boys, my son, might have done, right? I'm going to... Here, David, I mean, he's doing the full-on manly man thing. He's unafraid, he's fearful, he's fighting, he's battling, he runs to the line, he's shouting insults at the Philistine, he kills him, he cuts off his head, and I killed the Philistine. He's doing the man thing. Later, we see in David's story, we're a different side of his temperament, perhaps. And in 2 Samuel, this is many years later when the king of Israel, Saul, and Saul's son, Jonathan, have been killed in battle. And Jonathan was a close friend of David's. David and Jonathan were very, very good friends. And we see a different side, perhaps, of David's temperament here. And in 2 Samuel 1, starting with verse 24, David is singing a song. He heard that Jonathan is dead, and he's so moved that he just falls to the ground and he weeps and he's broken down. And when he gets up, he writes a song for his friend Jonathan, and this is just the end of it. O daughters of Israel, weep for Saul, who clothed you in scarlet and finery, who adorned your garments with articles of gold. How the mighty have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies slain on your heights. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of women. David is pouring out his heart. He is broken down relationally, emotionally, because his friend has died. Later on, when you read in the Psalms, you see both of these things. David will sometimes write a psalm and he says, God, strike down my enemies. Give me strength to fight the battle. Other times he will weep before the Lord and says, I'm broken. God, my heart is wrenched within me. I'm so sad. What's the point of that? Well, David can kind of fall somewhere on this spectrum of temperament, can't he? There are times when he looks like, man, just what you'd think a manly king would look like. Other times, he's acting and thinking in ways that we might perhaps think, well, that's more feminine, perhaps. David kind of falls on that spectrum in different places. Here's another thing to think about. Deborah. This idea, this woman named Deborah in Judges, who kind of, at some times, acts more like what we might think a man would act like. In Judges chapter 5, there's a battle to be fought. And Deborah says to a guy named Barak, you should go fight this battle. And Barak says, I'm afraid to. And Deborah says, well, I'll go. Follow me. I'll do it. And she, from the looks of it, she just charges into the battle. In Judges chapter 5, verse 15, it says, the princes of Issachar were with Deborah. Yes, Issachar was with Barak, rushing after him into the valley. They're singing a song talking about the battle where it sounds like Deborah was right there. Pull out a sword and lead the troops down the hill into battle. So Deborah sometimes ends up on the other side of where like David is over here. So you'd look at it and think, well, gosh, isn't this confusing? Isn't this kind of, how do we understand that? Well, here's how I think we understand that. Again, we can't confuse gender and temperament. Temperament, how we think and act, is fluid, and it's a spectrum, whereas gender is not. I tried to think of a way to describe that. I think this might make sense. This is a pot of water, and I told the kids I was going to dump it on somebody, but I'm not going to. but the water in this pot can be affected by all kinds of things. If I put ice in the water is going to get very, very cold. If I put heat under the water is going to get very, very hot. If I pour salt into this water, the water is going to taste salty. But if I pour sugar into this water, the water is going to taste sweet. So the water in here can be all kinds of different things. What stays the same in all of those things? The pot. The water inside, the pot never changes. The water inside the pot can be sweeter, salty, hotter, cold, but the pot doesn't change. In this analogy, the pot is the gender. And the water is the temperament. I have been created to be a man. That's my pot. Role-wise, biologically, I am made in God's image as a male. Now, inside of me, my temperament can be all kinds of things, just like David's was. I can flow back and forth. If you are a woman, that's your pot. You were made biologically and role-wise to be a woman, and that doesn't change. Your temperament can flow back and forth. The temperament is fluid. The gender is not. Does that make sense? The temperament is fluid. The gender is not. We can't confuse temperament and gender. They're different things. And it's good, I think, to recognize that as we're wrestling through, well, what is the truth God tells us about this? So I'm going to end with this. I showed you this picture last week. I'm required to. Like I said last week, this is my third granddaughter. All pastors are required to show their grandchildren. I have no choice in the matter. So that's my little, she's 4 weeks old today. Little Maddie, Madison Joy. She was created by God. God made her. That's what we believe. That's what God says in the Bible. We believe it. She was made in God's image. She reflects some of who God is. She was made as a little girl. She has all of the biological parts of a little girl. She was made female. The absolute best thing that that little girl can do with her life is not to define herself, but to understand how God defines her. Because it's good. And we looked at this verse last week in Psalm 139. Verse 13, it says, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." Sometimes it's hard to know who we are. I realize that. Sometimes it's hard to sort out, God, why am I this way? What do I do? I understand that it can be difficult for all kinds of different reasons. It can be difficult to know what God is saying about us. But to find out what God says about us, no matter how hard it is, it's always good. It's always good. God made that little girl. God made you. God made you in His image. In His understanding, in His choice, you're male or female. Those are designs that He created and He has assigned. Our gender is assigned to us like our birth date. The best possible thing we can do is find out, God, what have you said to me and what do I do with it? Why? Because it's wonderful. That's what He says. I made you wonderfully. Sometimes it's hard. It's always good to know, God, what am I? Who am I? How have you made me? Is gender distinct and definable? Yes. Yes. God made them distinct and He defines them. The best thing you and I can do is to say, all right, Lord, I accept that truth. Show me what that means to me. How do I follow you now in that truth? Let's pray. Father, thank you. Thank you that you are good. Lord, you are mysterious. We don't know how you create us. We don't know how a baby is formed from cells. We don't know why we have memories and emotions. We don't know why you made us in your image. There's so much we don't know. You are mysterious in so many ways. And God, you are powerful in so many ways. We see your great power. But God, we believe and we trust that you are good. You are good to us. You made me. You made each of us. Lord, help us to seek out that truth and to believe it and then to follow, to respond to you, Lord. Help us to do that. In Jesus' name, amen.